You had plenty of money, 1922. You let other women make a fool of you. Why don't you do right like some other men do?
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time to grab your popcorn and your drink. Please take your seat and always silence your cell phones. The next showing of Place to Be Nation's Laughing Theater with Andy Atherton is about to begin.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the theater, the Laughing Theater. I am your host, Andy Atherton, and thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight we have a very funny movie, one of my personal favorites, actually. Really, I have a lot of love for this movie, and hopefully it comes through tonight, and I think I've gotten the perfect guest. He is one half of the Geeks Who Like Sports podcast, Mr. Ray Carcillo. Ray, how are you tonight?
I'm good, Andy. How you doing? Happy to be here.
All right. Thank you for coming once again. Yes, I heard Ray speak about this on the great podcast you do with your buddy Lee, who actually was on the last episode, Great Debate. This is Ray's second time on Placement Nation Pop Feed. You joined me on a very, very great Star Wars edition of Great Debate with Lee and Scott Criscolo. And now I'm like, well, I got to get these guys back on Laughing Theaters. Lee will be back. Lee will be on Laughing Theater probably about 2 months. We have a very special timed episode for you. It's timing with an anniversary of a great movie and something I think Lee knows more about than anybody I've ever heard talk about it. So looking forward to that episode. But Ray is here tonight, and let's talk about Ray. So let's get to know Ray a little bit since he's not relatively, you know, not known well here at Place to Be Nation. So, Ray, you and Lee, you co-host Geeks Like Sports. That is a weekly podcast that basically combines what our core audience here at Placement Nation Pop loves, sports, and geekdom. So how did that all start? I know you and Lee go back years.
Yeah, so me and Lee have known each other since college. I was a freshman. He was a sophomore. And we actually kind of got started with a – it was actually kind of off on rocky footing because we first met. I was wearing a Rangers jersey and he was wearing a Flyers jersey. And, of course, those are two hated teams. And so we kind of like glared at each other. But then we got to talking actually about wrestling. It was pro wrestling that brought us together and then realized we had a lot of aside from not liking the same sports teams, we had a lot in common in terms of our geekdom and, of course, wrestling and things like that. And so, yeah, we've known each other now for almost 16 years. So, through trials and tribulations and everything. And I was in his wedding when he got married. And, you know, so we decided that since we always are talking to each other, even though we're a country apart again, you know, he was in England when I was in Jersey and now he's back on the East Coast and I'm in L.A. You know, we still talk constantly to each other. And we were just kind of like, we should record these conversations, right? Because we feel that there has to be other people like us out there who are having these conversations about wrestling and Spider-Man and the NFL draft and, you know, expansion draft for hockey and all these other things that are going on in the world or coming up in the world of sports and geekdom. And we realized that, there is a little bit of an audience for this. So I had a little bit of background in radio and a little bit in podcasting and, so, you know, I got myself my mic and we got ourselves a SoundCloud account. And next thing you know, Lee used his business acumen and social media savvy. And now we have Geeks Who Like Sports and we're 53 weeks in. We're 53 episodes in. Just celebrated our 1 year anniversary a couple episodes ago. So
that's great. I listen every week. Current climate is made it a little hard because I usually listen in the car. But I'm trying to catch up as much as I can. It's a great show. Anybody who's out there looking for something else to listen to outside of Place to Be Nation, support Geeks Who Like Sports. yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I kind of feel like, you know, I'm like in the conversation, because I relate to like almost everything you guys talk about. And it's funny how you talk about wrestling, because that's really what we were founded on here at Place of Nation. And it's amazing how these all go hand in hand: wrestling, sports, pop culture, geek stuff, and how many people became friends through wrestling. I'm one of my best friends. We didn't like each other when we met in high school, and then we found out we had a common thing, which was wrestling. And now, you know, yeah, like I said, he's my daughter's godfather, and you know, he lives in Alabama now. And yeah, it's just incredible how things like that bond us. But
yeah, it's when you find out somebody else likes wrestling, it's like every other barrier just melts away.
Yeah,
like it's really weird and interesting, because it's like it's such a special world. I want to say. That when you find somebody else who's on that level, you just click like in ways that you don't otherwise. You could have a Yankee fan and a Yankee fan, or I don't know, an Alabama Roll Tide, you know, whatever. Like dudes goes, it's different when you're you're a wrestling fan. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. And we always aren't very obvious. Like, you know, we don't sometimes right. like we try to, if we're in a situation where we're unaware if there's other wrestling fans, we kind of keep it quiet, and then once you find that little inkling and you get in, like, what? You like wrestling? And it's like, boom. It's like the floodgates open. And you just talk about booking and everything. Yeah, it's the great unifier, actually. It's kind of funny. It's, it's quite a community, and one I'm grateful to be a part of. But tonight we're here to watch a very funny movie, a groundbreaking movie, a movie that a lot of us love to death. Ray, what are we watching tonight?
We are watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit? An absolute classic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, from 1988, directed by Robert Zemeckis, produced by Steven Spielberg, starring Bob Hoskins, Christopher Lloyd, Joanna Cassidy, Charles Fleischer. Very funny movie, groundbreaking in many ways, I'm sure we'll talk about as we watch the movie. So, Ray, you know, like, you know, pulling back a little curtain, I kind of did kind of poke you a little bit about this, but why would you want to watch this movie?
Well, I mean, like you said, it is amazing. It was revolutionary for the time. It's also special because I can't think of another project where you have both Warner Brother cartoon characters and Disney characters working together, both getting equal billing in any sort of a project. It was also very special for me because it was one of those movies that I watched growing up that I really just fell in love with, and I love the over the top, crazy, zany characters. You know, I mean, So I didn't see it in the theater. I was a little too young, but of course I almost wore out the VHS tape. And we got it the following year when it came home, and my mom knew anything with cartoons when I was a kid, I'd be good for a couple hours.
Yes.
I don't think she knew how dark Who Framed Roger Rabbit could get at points.
Yeah.
At least for a small child, it could be a little dark. And when we'll talk about, and we'll definitely talk about, I'll point out some of my more traumatizing moments as we watch along. But you know, yeah, but it just really endeared me. And actually, funny enough, kind of like Randall from Clerks, while I was in college, I worked at a video store. So one of the movies that I could play because it's PG and get away with, but also still really enjoy and have fun with and not be like bored to tears with as you play the same Charlie Brown thing over and over and over again. Nothing, there's anything wrong with Charlie Brown, but yes. If you're working an 8-hour shift at a video store, there's certain movies that you want to watch and you can watch again and again. So for me, it was like Ghostbusters, Batman, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, those were at the top of the list, and you kind of – people knew when I was working, when I was on the TVs, that they could see from the street. So, you know, some people, you know, if you had your favorite clerk, some people – I'm not going to deny that I was some people's favorite clerk. But, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was definitely usually at the top of my list and would usually play it towards the end of the night, and that's when people knew it was getting close to closing time when the judge brought out the dip. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that a little bit more,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yes, for me, I was about 15. I was almost 16 when this came out, so I did see it in theaters, and it was for me. It was just amazing because you don't see a lot. You know, we didn't see a lot of live action and animation mixed together, mm-hmm. and the fact that you get to see Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse in a scene together, it's unreal. It's unheard of. And other things, you know, you get to see, like, as we talk about, like Betty Boop in there with you know. all kinds of other characters from Fantasia and Dumbo and everything. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's amazing. Yeah, for also, I mean, like you, I've never been there. Well, I haven't been there since I was 6 or 7, but you're local to L.A. Disneyland has that Roger Rabbit ride, which have you been on that?
I have not been on the Roger Rabbit ride, actually, I admit. But yeah, no, I mean, they've especially in recent years, and obviously now it's part of Disney Plus, really started leaning more into the Roger Rabbit franchise. And mm-hmm. I think that's really a great thing. I don't know if we'll ever get a sequel or ever get some kind of continuation, because even though this was – so a little known fact, this was based on a book mm-hmm. Called Who Censored Roger Rabbit. But they've actually – the author made 3 books in the series. So – who knows? It seems like there's plenty of material there for a sequel if Disney ever wanted to go that far. But this was also a very tough project, which I'm sure we'll talk about as well.
Awesome, awesome. So we're going to start the movie in one moment. But first, we're just going to talk a little bit about Place to Be Nation. Don't forget to check out all of our great feeds. The Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which has all tons of great wrestling shows from modern day stuff to the Vintage Vaults and the Place to Be podcast. We have an NXT show, a WCW retrospective. All kinds of fun stuff. The PlayStation Pop Feed, which is mostly right now my shows. We're in a little bit of a transition period, but check out Diamond Conversations, and it was a thing on TV, also on the feed. And then also check out our associate feeds, the North-South Connection, the brand new podcast feed by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell, all things wrestling. Chad is doing a Carolina Dreamin' series right now on some classic wrestling. He's doing his 2006 project. And all kinds of other fun stuff. And also, don't forget the Jenny position. That's Jennifer Smith's feed with Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, and many, many other things. Don't forget PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. New articles, fresh takes, authors all the time. We have a brand new football series that just started today, In the Huddle with Hinkle. He broke down the best players by position in the draft. That's coming up, the NFL draft this week. So check that out. So, Ray, are you ready to start watching Roger Rabbit?
Yes, I am.
So for those of you listening, we are watching it on Disney Plus. We're queued up at 00001, somewhere in that point. And on my count, we're going to start the movie, and we're off. Okay, so here we go. 3, 2, 1, start. And okay, the captioning says, Cool Jazz, the Touchstone Pictures logo just reveals.
Oh, man, that's such a classic logo, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Amblin Entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's Mr. Spielberg.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steven Spielberg. I mean, he was a key figure behind this project. I mean, people don't realize this. You got to remember, this is very much pre-digital age. Still, we're still probably about 10, 15 years away from a lot of the animation that we know now today, computerized. So this was a project that took 3 or 4 years to get off the ground. It was kind of a labor of love from Spielberg and Zemeckis, as we are seeing the a cartoon kind of as a lead into the real movie here with Roger and Baby Herman.
Something's cooking.
Yes, exactly. Very much a classic for folks who don't realize there used to be cartoons that used to play before movies way back in the day.
And they weren't so like Pixar. Well, Pixar does it, but these were different. These were just, I don't know, way to kind of get you in that kind of mood, I guess.
Yeah.
Give you a lot of laughs in a short amount of time.
Right. Exactly. It was, I mean, even before the cartoons, it's the Three Stooges, right? Mm-hmm. Like way back in the day, they were all those shorts. They would play before the movie to try and, offer you a little extra bang for your buck, but also, get you kind of in a light and festive move if you were going to see a comedy. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately we rarely get that anymore. And this, of course, even though it's part of the film, and we'll see how it all plays out, this was really an homage to something that was, especially at this time when it came out in the late 80s, wasn't happening in movies anymore. You didn't have anything in front of the film. You just had the film. The cartoons had been phased out.
Mm-hmm. So Roger is tasked in this cartoon with being a babysitter, and Baby Herman is kind of hell-bent on getting himself a cookie.
Yeah.
And all kinds of dangers... precarious situations ensue, leading to Roger like having a tea kettle on his head right now.
Yes, exactly. It's very much Tom and Jerry esque mm-hmm. in terms of the slapstick nature mm-hmm. of the animation here. But it's done in a beautiful style here. I mean, and this is at a time when animation isn't getting as much love as it used to, at least, you know, for the law part, either from Disney or Warner Brothers, from both of them in the 80s. So to do an homage to something like, to me, at least, like I said, I think this reminds me a lot of Tom and Jerry in a way. It's the action plays out and the slapstick craziness of this.
Roger getting electrocuted, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we're so this came out in 88. So we're about a year before Disney's second golden age, basically, because Little Mermaid comes out in 89. I think Rescuers Down Under may have been out. I'm not sure.
I think Rescuers came out. Rescuers Down Under was like one of the few missteps they made in the early 90s. But yeah, this was a lot of folks credit this movie actually as helping to get Disney to think about how important animation was, because they had shortly after this, Oliver and Company came out, which had a huge media push behind it, and it did all right. But yeah, once you had Little Mermaid, and then a couple years after that, you had Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and a lot of the reason why they put a lot of time into it was because of this movie and how popular this movie is. I mean, we can't forget this movie won 3 Academy Awards plus a fourth. They completely made an Academy Award just to give this a special achievement Academy Award just for this movie, because it was so special at the time and really helped bring animation back into, like you said, and kick off that second golden age.
This is where when I see this for the first time, the scene right here where Roger is like, and just, they break the fourth wall, and they now they have like the director come in, and it's like live action. It blew my mind. Like, as 15 years old.
Oh yeah, no, me too. As a little kid, to think that my whole world had changed, because I was like 5 or 6 when I saw this for the first time, and I was like, this is like, I'm like, wait a minute, the cartoons live in our world. It's real. I can see them. They're somewhere out here. Like, it completely messed with my sense of reality. But it is such a it's so greatly done, and of course a throwback to the old idea of sound stages in Hollywood and everything with the old cameras and the older garb, because of course this takes place more in the golden age of Hollywood, right, where LA is
like
just starting
40s,
to expand,
I think, yeah.
Late 40s, early 50s. So, but yeah, I mean, what my favorite part about this is that, you know, you see here as the director rips the coat out of Roger's hands, they built a lot of early, that we kind of take for granted now, animatronics, like early robots, so that this way that when like that coat that's pulled taut, it's actually being pinched by a robotic arm that then the animators would then animate over later. So they had to really, it's not only cinematically a step forward, but in terms of the technology that they had to create specifically for this film, for a lot of these shots, it was mind-blowing at the time. And like you said, Hollywood 1947 just popped up. So there was, like you said, the late 40s. So
For the first time, I never noticed that they had the woman's feet. Like, somebody was in stilts and to make it look like they were filming it live action.
Right, and to make it feel look, yeah, I didn't notice that either until as if the mom was actually that much larger than Baby Herman and Roger, even though obviously they're more life size.
Baby Herman, who goes under a woman's skirt and says, "Excuse me, toots."
Yeah. Baby Herman, instead of cookies, he wants cigars.
Here's,
Arcane
Maroon, the head of somewhat Walt Disney-esque character. Although probably, I would think, actually, what's his face? Marvin Acme's probably more of the Walt Disney, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, he's more joyful. I mean, at least is what people want to think Disney, right? As Uncle Walt, right? Because, like, he's joyful, he's over the top, he absolutely is enamored with the cartoons. And R.K. Maroon is the evil, conniving businessman who, I guess Marley wants more representing one of the Warner Brothers, maybe.
Yeah. With Eddie Valiant right here, played by the great and late Bob Hoskins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, his performance in this film, this is something, if you're trying to be an actor in Hollywood, you should watch this. Like, the way he The depth he gives Eddie Valiant, who could easily be he himself a cartoony character in this world of cartoons, but he plays it so straight and so serious for most of the film that, you know, you really believe he is this hardened gumshoe in this world of where toons are crossing over on a regular basis.
The instruments get out.
Yes.
Yeah, just...
You know, and actually Zemeckis actually went on record. He made Hoskins take a mime class because another key thing is that when they didn't have the animatronics, Bob is playing to
like tennis balls or something. Yeah,
there's nothing there. Sometimes they'd have a grip there or somebody there as a fill-in. Even Zemeckis himself would sometimes would be filling in there on set for him to have an eye line. But for the most part, like, and we'll get, and I'll point out certain scenes in particular later that I am particularly thrilled with, where it's just mime work by Hoskins, and he's just mimicking as if he's actually there, talking to someone, holding that sight line, which is very hard to do when you really don't have anything to look at. Yeah. I mean, even there, as the ostrich walks by, for him to actually, like, he holds that line, and also it's a credit to, of course, the animators who made sure to fill in properly when they could, so that they also made Bob look as great as possible.
Yeah, he emotes there, the Brooms from Fantasia. It's just, I mean, if you love old Hollywood too, just like, from like a set design perspective, like I'm like just like my eyes get big, like cause I just like love this stuff. Like I would love to walk through this set, like and just be. I would like to be here. That's really what it is. See, you see the aftermath of the stork.
Stork.
Yeah. Cattle call.
The cattle call with all the cows.
Lots of sight gags in this movie as well.
There's the hippo. No, for sure. Oh goodness! I mean, and of course, obviously, all these guys, you know, on fishing wire and all that other stuff. I'm sure, but you know, everybody who's having to play to things that aren't really there, it's really a phenomenal sight to see. And of course, the old electric cars that don't exist in in LA anymore.
Yeah, I just noticed Brer Bear walking. I never noticed the Bozo the Clown in black and white that was there for like a second.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course, Eddie Valiant hitching a ride on the terminal like a bum. Oh, gosh. Yeah. World's finest public transportation system. Now a Cloverfest industry. A bit of... foreshadowing there that you don't realize how important that is until you watch the film a second or a third time.
I mean, this literally looks like you're walking down Hollywood Studios in Florida. That's really what it looks like. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Goodness gracious.
Thanks for the cigarettes.
Something
you wouldn't see in a Disney movie today.
That's also true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, things are... no, it's a good point. Smoking, of course, is much more taboo now in all film, not just never mind a Disney film. I mean, you have it even before this started. It said you know, smoking portrayed in this in this picture. You know, I mean, obviously in 1988 it was a big deal, obviously, but not like what it is now. You know, in terms of smoking and making sure that people are aware that it's not a good thing for you.
Yeah, we just, on the last episode of my Disney series, Pop Goes the Classics, we did Pinocchio, and there was a lot of tobacco use in that movie, actually. And
they
put a warning up ahead of that. So here's Eddie Valiant in a bar, I guess, with the locals.
Yes.
His local drinking crew.
Yep. And his on-again, off-again squeeze, Dolores, if I remember, is the... bartender who should be making her entrance any second now, hopefully.
yes, she's
if I remember correctly.
There's her hand.
Oh, there she is.
Played by Joanna Cassidy.
Yes, another undersung character in this film, because she obviously the tunes steal the show, and you have Christopher Lloyd come in later, and he's so over the top, and again Hoskins is such a central character, but she. For him, is a grounding a real grounding character for him, because you realize she's the only for after you very quickly realize she's the only good thing in his life.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's, you know, we've seen that we were only a few minutes into this movie. We've already seen him drinking twice, yeah. You know, hitching a ride on a cable car, giving kids smokes. And then there's this great woman who's trying to keep him on the straight and narrow as best she can while actually working a job. And Eddie is, well, we can assume down on his luck. We find out why later, but at the moment, assume that things aren't all up and up for the Valiant in general.
Yeah. Yeah. She does a very great, of the time, like very, like she's a dame. She's, you know, with her accent and everything. And now you got this guy just, busting Eddie's stones here.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Well, this is the thing is that, I mean, and it's also very quickly, you also understand that Eddie is not somebody to be trifled with, that even though he's not as sharp as he once was, mm-hmm. he's here it is.
Yeah.
He is a force to be reckoned with.
He doesn't work for tones. He's not very physically imposing too. He's short, kind of, you know, not, you know, thin fellow. He's not huge, but he's not, you know, svelte. The saying is, and now we can learn really
the origin story. Yeah,
the root of Eddie's pain is that Tim killed his brother.
Yeah, and dropped the piano on his head.
So Eddie's now at the back door of a alley.
Yeah.
Password. Walt sent me.
Of course, you have the giant gorilla there as the doorman, as the bouncer.
Wearing a monkey suit.
Yes. nice monkey suit. Yeah, there.
Wise ass.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, a cartoon swore. That's as bad as it got.
Yeah. Well, especially because this was a Disney project. This is Disney Animation Studios, right? Like, yes, it has Warner Brother characters in it, but
it's Touchstone, which was kind of their "we can get away with a little bit more" label.
Right. That's true. And this is where we really start. This is where it's really special, because now you've got two. You've got a Disney character literally dueling pianos with a Warner Brothers character. It's Daffy versus Donald.
I love this scene.
And it's old school Daffy too. Like mm-hmm. it's you can tell by his rounded head, it's a bit more of an old school animation style.
In the Ink and Paint Club.
Yes.
Goofy look. Oh my god. That's scary octopus character there for the bartender.
That's another one of those, by the way, that's another one of those animatronics they built where they had several arms moving at once on strings. And so that's why it looks like he's able to actually hold real life glasses in the air, is that it's actually in like vice grips that they're moving around. And there, of course, is our buddy, Mr. Acme.
When you first see it, like, what is this old guy's problem?
Yeah. Oh man. Stain's gone. Again, another foreshadowing element that, again, very important to the overall plot. Marvin Acme with his wink-wink disappearing ink.
And his joy buzzer.
Yes.
Still our biggest seller. You know, the penguins from Mary Poppins are the waiters.
Yes.
Scotch and rocks. Ice!
Eddie's third drink. I was going to say, if you want to do a drinking game, have a drink whenever Eddie has a drink, and you won't last the movie of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
No. Yeah, I love Donald, probably my favorite, though. I mean, I love Mickey, but Donald, just when he gets mad, just loses his shit. And there's Daffy. Yeah. Like, Daffy's like, gone, like, he looks like he's, like, with the hair going. And
yeah, no, well, he's truly Daffy, right? Yeah. Like, he's truly, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. And then
Donald with the cannon.
Yeah, but I love Eddie's face, because he looks at it like it's like real, like it could do real harm. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, he's like having a panic attack when Donald pulls out the cannon while the crowd is going wild. They're going bananas. Oh, God. Marvin Hagley, those ducks are funny. they never get to finish the act.
Oh, God. Scotch rocks.
Literal rock. Oh, and here comes Betty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Looks like, you know, they go back.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying it in like a way, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and we learn more later that actually, I mean, not to spoil anything, but Eddie actually, you know, he has a real history with the Toons.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, now we get our femme fatale,
mm-hmm.
Which I love also hearing the animation designers talk about how they designed her and like how many iterations they had to go through with Jessica till they felt they got it just right. Because they didn't want her to be too realistic,
but
also something to the point where even somebody like Eddie Valiant could feel a little something stirring, you know?
Yeah.
This guy who hates tunes, but this is no ordinary tune.
This is no where would you put her? You put her above Judy Jetson and Betty Rubble?
Oh yeah. Oh, I think so for sure.
Yeah. Although they're probably more gettable.
Oh, also for sure. Yeah. I mean, Jessica Rabbit is out of everybody's league except somehow Roger, which is, of course, the great joke of it all, right?
He makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Voiced by Kathleen Turner before her voice got even deeper.
Yeah. Yeah, people forget. Yeah, it's not her singing, though. No. I forget who else. It's someone else doing the singing voice. But for her lines, yes, it is Kathleen Turner. But yeah, no, it. Yeah, absolute. Yeah, even as a little kid, I knew this was something special.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you think about perfect voice casting. And
yeah,
that goes up there.
Yeah.
You know, that's up there with like Ellen DeGeneres' Dory. You know, mm-hmm. Billy Crystal's Mike Wazowski. Yeah, that's just perfect matching the character to the voice.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and that's the thing, right, is that a lot of times, you know, they animate it, you know, they do the voice acting as, for the most part, as one of the last things in something like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll typically animate first, or actually, well, that's not true. It depends on the project.
Yeah.
Because a lot of cartoons, a lot of American animation, they do the voiceover and then they animate to the voices. But, you know, for Jessica, I think they had a pretty good idea in mind how she was going to look, how she was going to move, and then they cast.
Yeah.
Because like a perfect example is actually for Charles Fleischer, who of course does the voice of Roger. He infamously, even though, again, he's later animated, he was infamously there every day of shooting when he had a scene doing the voice, even though they would later re-record him in a booth, but he would be there doing the voice for the actors to play off of so that they knew he was there. And he was so into his role. This is true. And a lot of Zemeckis went along with it, but a lot of folks thought he was crazy. Fleischer demanded that they get him a life-size Roger Rabbit costume so that he could be in costume while he was performing, even though you never see him physically mm-hmm. on screen ever. But that's how much he wanted to be in the role. So that's a little tidbit. Is that Charles Fleischer, I have no idea if he still has it, but got himself a life-size rabbit suit to wear every day that he was on set when Roger would have to do a scene with Bob or with Christopher Lloyd or whoever.
That is some extreme method acting right there.
Yeah.
Now, Eddie gets thrown out of the club for peeking in on Mr. Marvin Acme visiting Jessica in her dressing room.
Yeah, because there's rumors that Marvin and Jessica are up to a little more than meets the eye. They're not just he's not just a patron of the arts.
No. And because he never misses a performance, according to Betty Boop.
Yes, exactly. So, and Eddie now getting out his camera.
And you kind of hear, it leaves up to the imagination. This is one of those parts, like, grown-ups would be like, what are they doing in there? You know, there's a line later on that Dolores says that's like, you know, kids won't get, but adults will like crack up.
Yes.
And when she says it, I'll probably crack up. But yeah. And Eddie's face, he's like, what are they doing? You know, patty cake. Is that kind of a sick thing?
Yeah. And then, of course, when it's revealed to Roger, and yeah, so we're still thinking patty cake is code for something else. Wink, wink. You know, as RK Maroon, of course, trying to be the consoling. Oh, don't worry about it, buddy. Even though we had this plan to reveal to you the whole time as part of our larger scheme, man. Yeah.
This is like one of those things. Like Roger gives him a handkerchief, and you can see it's like all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gross.
And yeah. Then, of course, here it is, the great reveal. It's actually Pat. They're actually playing patty cake.
And the way Roger is going through the pictures, he basically animates it.
Yes. Oh, God. Because, of course, in Toon World, patty cake, I guess, is a real more important thing.
I guess,
what we thought was happening there. But, of course, it's a kids' movie, so they had to. Clear that up as quickly as possible.
Now, there's Eddie's fourth time drinking today. For those of you keeping score,
there you go.
And this comes. This is another thing that comes back too. Roger drinking doesn't quite handle his liquor.
Yes, that's a very good. That's a very good call. Yeah, this is. They did a great job of setting up. So they set up the rules of this world, which is such a unique world.
Yeah.
So early on. That it makes everything, all the insanity that happens later, all the more believable. And so they did such a great, great job with that. That's a good call, Andy.
Yes. Thanks. I needed that.
Yeah.
Please. I do a little bit of a Roger Rabbit. Not great. Not great. I try.
Please. Yeah. Please.
Dear Jessica. I like, sometimes I've been referred to as a real life Roger Rabbit. Why'd you do that? Why? Because it was funny?
Yeah.
Yes, a cartoon rabbit is my inspiration for some of my stupid jokes. But yeah, so their office is basically wrecked from Roger having one shot.
Yeah, he basically turns into a port whistle, which then he shatters everything that made of glass in the room as he hits that perfect pitch.
Yeah,
we're gonna be happy again. Got that? Happy, capital HAPPI.
I love that. The shape of the cartoon.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And that, too, also, I mean, it's also funny. RK Maroon's office, which is the big rival to Acme with the Acme warehouse, literally overlooking each other. Mm-hmm. The rivals are literally very similar to Hollywood here. Out here in L.A., if you look, the studios are all right. For a long time, we're very much right on top of each other.
Yeah.
And there's still shades of that out here. So, yeah, for Acme in his warehouse to be just down the street from Maroon, who, of course, is his biggest rival, is, you know, it's a nice touch.
Yeah. So I've never actually been to Hollywood. I've only been to California once. And I was in the summer of 1979. I stayed near San Diego, but we went up to Disneyland towards the end of the time there. So that's the thing.
That's the thing. I don't know if they still have the Who Framed Roger Rabbit ride.
Hmm.
Anymore. That's why I don't know. I'll have to look again. Because that's the thing, is that everything at Disney is constantly changing.
Yes.
So well, you go there one summer, it could be completely different the next. I mean, obviously they've built all the Avenger stuff now and a whole new world with Star Wars Land. Like it's constantly changing here as we look at Eddie now going down memory lane and thinking about happier times with his brother and Dolores and on vacation and black and white photos. And
so looking it up. So it's Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin. It's currently at Disneyland and it's also in Tokyo. It's a Tokyo Disneyland opened in January 1994. So,
oh, well, I stand corrected. I mean, I just missed it. Last time I was there. Because there's also so much to do at Disneyland that sometimes if you make a wrong turn, you'll miss what's happening. Meanwhile, here we're seeing, again, basically the
brother, Teddy.
Brother, all of Goofy cleared of spy charges, which is hysterical. I mean, you see that...
he has a sense of humor.
Yeah, him and his brother, all their memories and how they actually used to be clowns in the circus with their father and that they really were... they were really, really happy for a long time together. And now Eddie, as some memory lane, trips memory lane will lead to, drunk again, passed out on his desk after looking at all of the pictures. And another, a friend of his from the Force has forcibly woken him up.
Lieutenant Santino. Yeah, and you can see that how it's Teddy's side of the desk is untouched with the amount of dust there.
Yeah. A couple of dirty pictures.
So sue me. Oh, and they found Marvin Acme. They think Roger did it.
Yep. Yep. this is when the plot thickens.
Yes. They're back at another Acme Studios, and first time we get a real glimpse of Toontown.
Yeah. Yeah, literally right over the wall, and it's literally a true cartoon world as Yosemite Sam.
My biscuits are burning.
Yeah. Now this is one of the few times that Mel Blanc did not voice Yosemite Sam. I forget who else they had gotten to do it. Mel Blanc did do Bugs and several of his other characters, but this was towards the end of Mel's life, and Yosemite was too much for his vocal cords at this point.
Might have been his son. I think his son had taken over doing some of them. No,
maybe, mm-hmm. maybe because Mel, unfortunately Mel would pass away. I want to say a year later, maybe 18 months after this was debuted. So, but again, also this was also a picture that took about, like I said earlier, about 3 to 4 years for them to make because so much work went into it. And I love it. Again, you talk to the animators and all the guys who talked about like. They knew they were working on something special at the time, mm-hmm. but it was also easily their most difficult project they had ever done and at that time and since. And of course, more foreshadowing here. Yeah, with the sight gags here, with all the stuff in the Acme warehouse.
Mm-hmm. So he passed away in 1989.
Yeah, so the year after this debuted in theaters.
I actually have the Speechless animated cell. Where it's all the Looney Tunes characters with their heads bowed, and there's a microphone under a spotlight in tribute to him.
Yeah, so, something. Yeah, I remember watching an old appearance of him on Letterman, just doing all the voices and just slipping from one to another, and just amazing. And now Jessica comes in, and full Kathleen Turner. I hope you're proud of yourself, as she. Slaps Eddie across the face.
The squeaky shoes.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Oh, gosh.
There's Marvin Acme.
And his joy buzzer that pops off. Already a key clue. Mm-hmm. And some folks who aren't... and then here... Here's Christopher Lloyd
as
Judge
Doom.
Is this man removing evidence from the scene of a crime?
You know, Judge Doom does not be trifled with. No. And Eddie certainly does right there.
Oh, gosh.
I wasn't working for a tune.
I was working for R.K. Maroon. Yes, we talked to Mr. Maroon. He told us the rabbit became quite agitated. Sorry, I could just do this all day.
You're not the first one on this show. Trust me. Yeah. My premiere episode was Caddyshack, so just imagine how that went.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have Animal House. Actually, my next episode is Animal House.
Nice.
Teaser.
Nice.
But so, yeah, so those, yeah, it's, that's why I generally try to look for people who love these movies. And it's okay to quote because people do that in their heads.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. And now Doom with his weasels.
Mm-hmm. and they each have a very distinct personality, too, which is fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, even though they all have distinct personalities, but I think it was only three actors who actually voiced all. There's an actor who does voices for at least every actor does a voice for at least two of the Weasels.
Yeah,
that I they got to do the Weasel Gang.
I think it was John Cassier who he did the Crypt Keeper, and he also, if you watch the old HBO football show, which was First and Ten, he played the kicker, Zagrev Šunuski.
Oh, yeah.
But he went on to become a very big cartoon guy up there with like guys like Maurice LaMarche and other famous people.
Yeah, and this is the first traumatizing scene now.
Yes.
As Judge Doom takes the squeaky shoe that was not rounded up by the police, and we get introduced to labeled a vat of turpentine, but is actually
dip.
What he calls dip.
Yes.
And
they get to reveal how the actual way turpentine, acetone, benzine.
Benzine. Calls it the dip.
All this shoe did was like rub up against him.
Yeah.
That's what makes it more traumatizing. The shoe wasn't doing anything.
I know, the shoe wasn't doing anything. And then it's the look on its face as it disappears and all the paint disappear. It just, this still breaks my heart. This still, this is like one of the all-time like great villain moments where you realize how evil Doom is in that he will kill a cartoon.
And you see the paint on his hand, on his glove.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
not
just
kid gloves, Mr. Valiant.
Yeah. It wasn't like he took like a nasty cartoon character. This sweet little shoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, in my head, all I have is Austin Powers. Who throws a shoe, honestly?
Yeah. No. And of course, though, they were very purposeful in using a red shoe because obviously it makes it all the more dramatic. It looks like blood.
Yeah.
as Baby Herman's keeper. I don't know what to call else to call her.
Yeah, we'll just say that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Baby Hermans, I want to talk to you about the Acme murder.
Yeah. Doll, why don't you run downstairs, get me a medicine form?
Doll.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is it. It's like Jessica says famously later, they're drawn that way, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a baby who's been a baby for who knows how long.
With a 2-year-old dinky, he says.
Yeah. Oh gosh! Now, of course, the plot point of the will.
Mm-hmm.
Every toon knows Acme had a will. He promised to leave Toontown to us toons.
It's all succotash.
Yeah.
My father still likes succotash. Oh, so Nancy Cartwright did the voice of the dipped shoe. Who is that?
Oh,
that's Bart Simpson. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
My stogie! Now he starts crying like a baby. Oh gosh, yeah, this is great. This is great. And then, of course, and I think, I don't know if it's just the newspaper or like it's really interesting how the picture they used with Acme there in the paper. So it doesn't look perfectly like Jessica.
No.
They couldn't get the original photos. So it's almost like an approximation. And the convenience of Eddie's sixth drink.
Oh, it's, it's the next day. So.
No, that's true.
He got a little bit. He didn't sleep. He more passed out, but.
Yeah. With the wild turkey there.
Yes. The baby was right. There's the will.
Yeah.
This is also a great, Hollywood noir, detective crime noir movie.
Eddie actually shows that he has to, he has skills, right? Like, even though he stumbled upon that, you can see it's gnawing at him. There's more to this case than is being let on, and now, of course, the beginning of the famous duo.
Yes, it happens.
Something's
to be
hiding under Eddie's bed.
Yes.
And it ain't Dolores.
Dolores! A little Seinfeld reference there. How'd you get it? Through the mail slot.
Oh, gosh. Yeah,
and like you said, there's nobody there for Eddie to or Bob to play off of.
No.
It's just an amazing performance. And his sight lines are perfect.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's really a team effort that even if there's somebody there to give him the sight lines. See, this is really where it's great acting, right? Mm-hmm. Where he grabs Roger, and you really believe that there's weight in his hand.
Yes.
That he has grabbed a hold of this tune, and he's pulling, and he's fighting. And sure, there's a couple of cells of what you may call like a shadow pull or whatever, but like for the most part, the animators have done an amazing job to actually fill his hands with something and for him to actually play as if there's something there. It's just really a brilliant, brilliant job all around. And because another one of my favorite details, and now we can kind of get a little more into it because obviously now Roger is here interacting directly with Eddie, is because you're trying to make a tune look real in a 3D world, but not so 3D that they appear to be like a 3D model, right? Mm-hmm. And they did that by having to do literally every scene. They had to do 4 to 5 layers for the character. So you have the layer of a light, you have the layer of the shadow, you have the layer of the main body. Then you have different layers from depending on where the light source in the room is actually coming from.
Yeah, because they would have to put everything.
Yeah, and they would have to put it all together piece by piece by piece. So each moment that Roger's in the real world, mm-hmm. it's really actually 5 or 6 overlays of cell shading on top of the dailies that they were shooting at the time. I mean, and that's really the craziest thing about this is that, you know, how much work would go into that. And they actually, the animator said, and of course now Eddie screaming, get out of that chair.
That's one thing I love too. You see Roger, you know, handprint, you know, moving the dust. He looks like a sensitive and sober fella. The liquor store guy, he knew.
But yeah, and of course now Roger with his sad story, so long, thanks for nothing. That's the closet, which of course, classic cartoon character, he walks right into the closet instead of out the door. Oh gosh, and then, but yeah, so you had all this work and they said like, for a typical animated feature at that time, you're looking at 85 to 95 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
For this, they had to do probably about 55 to 60 minutes of animation on top of the hour and 44 minutes of the actual movie that had to be shot of everybody in the real world. So it's actually almost as if they did close to a 3-hour movie that once put all together came out to an hour 44, an hour 45.
Yep. And the weasels are here. And
here they come, parking perfectly.
And we have the famous, you know, Eddie and Roger handcuffed together thanks to Roger.
Yes. Oh, what a scene. What a scene. And again, Hoskins just acting amazingly this whole time. And by the way the weasels parked, if you look at that scene, that's how most people park in L.A. They just don't care. They just woo. So that's nothing new here. You know, Roger pleading his case.
Yep.
Don't make us play rough, Valiant. We just want the rabbit.
And Eddie, who obviously can be bought.
You're right.
But maybe, you know, he was down on his
luck. They just want the rabbit.
Yeah. They shoot out the door.
Yeah. But this scene is also critical because this is when you really learn the character mm-hmm. of Eddie Valiant, right? As far as he's fallen, mm-hmm. his morals as still a decent guy and a decent cop, makes it feel like the fact that he goes along with Roger, as much as he hates doing it, he knows there's something bigger going on. As much as he hates Roger, he's got to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. Sitting there doing his lingerie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought tunes could breathe underwater. Search the place, boys.
Leave no stone unturned. Which, by the way, like, until watching with subtitles, did not realize that he said intern, that he messed up that to cut to keep the accent so thick for the weasels. Eddie washes the weasels out mouth out with soap. Yeah,
the lead weasel.
Yes. Yeah. They all have names, but they're not really referenced ever. And then, of course, another key plot point here, mm-hmm. as he explains, stop that laughing or you'll laugh yourselves to death. You know what happens when you can't stop laughing?
Don't.
One of these days you're going to die laughing.
This is, again, another foreshadow. This movie is
just,
I mean, this is, if you ever want to get into film, and learn to be a storyteller and learn how to make a movie that just layers upon layers. And it's just, and it's under the candy coating of a kid's movie. You know, this is such a deep study.
Yeah.
The famous kiss.
Yeah. Don't ever kiss me again. Oh,
and
man.
Like we talked about a little bit before we start recording that, you know, when you watch a movie a certain way, you know, now we're watching it without the sound, with the closed captioning on, and this, there's so much hidden and little details, and that we're kind of like hyper focused on stuff because we want to talk about the movie and share kind of our knowledge on it, and there's things that we're picking up on and becoming more crystal clear to us, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, for sure, exactly. Again, like even like the even
a little psych gag there.
Yes, that as a kid didn't really think anything of.
Is that a rabbit in your pocket? Now, you're happy to see me.
Yeah, no, exactly. Now it's obviously got so means so much more. That's great. Obviously, where Roger starts to pop out and he pushes him down and it pushes out and it looks like something else when Dolores walks into the scene. Oh gosh.
Yeah, and they're in a little speakeasy.
Yeah. And again, just the physicality of.
Roger's eye snuck in the beer bottle down.
Oh, God. No, this is great. Yeah, no, this somebody's made a patsy out of me. I'm going to find out who. And that's the thing, too. See, and that's the thing is that right now for Eddie, it's also a little personal still, right? That's why he's doing it. He doesn't want to help. And this is, of course, the big reveal is coming. Roger slips right out of the cup.
Does that help? Yeah, thanks. And then he puts it back in quickly.
Oh goodness, only when it was funny, like he referenced earlier, that's the moment. There it is. Where's your sense of humor?
My philosophy is this. What is it, Eddie?
Yeah, now they're showing the picture with that he blew up of the will, which of course is the key to everything. And of course, now Eddie's theory is that Jessica's the one who bumped him off and took the will. Because this is the thing, right? Of course, like a classic noir story, the first theory never proves out, but you need to start somewhere. You need to start putting the pieces together somehow. And then you start, and just like a classic hypothesis, you have to start testing those theories. Not prostate, you idiot.
Probate, not prostate. I didn't get that joke either the first time.
Yeah, me either as a kid. No. Yeah. Oh, I had no idea what a prostate was. I was like, prostate? Does that have something to do with the state? State of New Jersey? State of California? What state are we talking about here? Oh gosh!
He's like, didn't do anything crazy, is he?
Yeah. And now Jessica has, of course, come back and met Eddie at. So now this is funny. So the reason why Eddie is in the bathroom when Jessica comes in. Is because there's not a lot of deleted scenes from this movie. Mm-hmm. But one of the first scenes they finished, and actually finished animating, was that the weasels supposedly come back to visit the office and give Eddie a hard time. And what ends up happening is that they end up taking him into Toontown, and because he's a police officer, they draw in Toontown a giant pig on his head.
Oh.
So it looks like he's got like an animated pig head on top of Bob Hoskins' body. And what he has to do is that he then gets back to his apartment and actually takes a shower and washes off the animated pig head. So that's why he's in the bathroom when this scene starts. And it's and unfortunately, so that's why they added the toilet flush there in post, just to make it seem like, well, that's what, because who takes their shirt off to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I know. And leaves their tie on.
Right. Exactly. Right. He was in the middle of getting redressed from getting out of the shower. So that's what it was. But it was a scene that unfortunately hit the cutting room floor. and here's
Eddie with his pants down, literally caught with his pants down.
Yes, yeah.
His head on, knocks his head off with Jessica's animated boobs.
Oh, God. Offer stands firm. Something else stands firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The animated kiss. Oh, gosh. Doris ain't happy.
Yeah.
Oh, probably. Yeah, Gugan for instance, take the knife.
It's always the wife. That's what it is.
Just bad time. Poor Eddie Valiant. Oh, gosh. Just was taking a shower, and then Jessica Rabbit comes barging in. Meanwhile, she's there in the car, loving the fact that she's sowed some seeds of the dissent between the two.
And we're going to go to Catalina.
Yeah.
Eddie thinks he's getting close, but no.
Maroon's not after Toontown.
It's Cloverleaf.
Cloverleaf.
This mysterious Cloverleaf.
That we see. Yeah, suddenly the second time we've seen Cloverleaf come up in the movie now. Mm-hmm. They put all the good guys out of business. They bought the tram cars.
Yeah. The guy lost his job, one of the regulars in the the bar there.
Buy the red car, and then they want to get their hands on Toontown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the weasels just... the rabbits nearby.
Yeah.
And Roger just can't resist entertaining.
He's got to put on a show.
Mm-hmm. These guys are having a grand old time here in the bar, I guess.
Yep.
It's Angelo.
Yeah.
Wearing a wig.
Yeah.
No pain.
Yes, of course. When Dolores freaking out. And again, this is another one of those. This is actually an animatronic. This is actually one of the first animatronics they built where they had an arm reach, grab the plate, and break it over itself. And it did it repeatedly for that scene. And then they animated to it afterwards. So... yeah, just a great little thing. Again, it's just the technology and everything they did in order to shoot this and make everything seem real and really blur those lines.
Yeah. So yeah, now they're back in the back room hiding out.
Yeah,
because you know Eddie knows that you know people can be bought because he's been bought before.
Right. Exactly. And this is also, again, the idea that a laugh can be a very powerful thing, right? Mm-hmm. You laugh too much and you'll kill you. A laugh can be a powerful thing.
And then Dolores sets off the alarm for them.
Yeah, because, hello, Judge Doom. I'm looking for a murderer.
As they clean up the bar from Roger's antics.
The trolley rolling in the background. A rabbit!
Even though they're all, like, you know, humans, they're, like, they're all pretty afraid of Judge Doom here.
Yeah. Well, especially because Christopher Lloyd is very tall.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they gave him any kind of boots or anything for this, but, like, he is an imposing figure for everyone in this... in this room, as he now is the wounded army veteran, I'll imagine from World War II.
Yeah.
and the judge starts to scratch onto the onto the chalkboard. I'm very happy that we're only watching with the subtitles now, because that nails on. Yeah, that's my reaction. The reaction of you seeing everybody in the bar and that Roger with the nails on the chalkboard.
Wow, $500. I don't know if I would have kept my mouth shut.
1947 money? That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there's Angelo.
I seen a rabbit.
But then also, it's a great moment, though, because then Angelo redeems himself, and it makes Roger – gives Roger some credibility.
All the other guys are like, we wouldn't say
that. Yeah, oh, he's going to really –
say hello, Javi.
Yeah. Because obviously he's on the sauce, so it's like the pink rabbits or the pink elephants or anything that you might see when you drink too much kind of thing. And like those veneers there for Judge Doom.
And obviously it looks like that one guy's probably an actor because he's dressed like a cowboy.
Yeah, baby. Actually, there's still cowboys out here in L.A. People don't realize that. There's still trails and people like to go riding and stuff and horses and yeah. You don't see him too much around Hollywood, but the merry-go-round broke down. Quite a loony selection for a group of drunken reprobates.
They're all like, rrr. Yeah. He smells it.
Yeah.
He's here.
Oh, and then throw that. That was such a great throw with the record.
There we go. Another admonishment to stop laughing to the weasels.
Yeah.
What happened last time? You're gonna have dead like your hyena cousins.
Yep. Disresemble the place. The sergeant always using the wrong word. I love it. and this, of course, great. I mean, this is when I learned that this meant shaving a haircut 2 bits.
Yeah, I didn't know that either till now.
Yeah, this is where I learned it. Like, I'd always heard it before in a cartoon, but I didn't know what it meant. No tune can resist the old shave and a haircut trick.
Yeah.
And he doesn't believe it. He's like, yeah.
You are doomed. And there's Roger.
Yeah, having him ready to have a breakdown.
It's like somebody setting you up for somebody saying something stupid and you just can't wait to like call them out on it.
You gotta just say something. Judge Doom just muttering it.
Over and over and over. It's like torture. Yeah. And then Roger
2 bits.
Yeah, Roger's goose is cooked, so to speak.
Yeah.
We'll deal with him later.
Dispensing some justice. Bring me some dip. Oof. Missed a chance for a joke there. Some onion dip or some what? This is so tremendous here, because you think Roger's done. How is he going to get out of this? The judge literally has him in his clutches.
And Eddie's in his drunken state. Remember something? Asking Dolores for a double bourbon.
Yep. Everyone bows their heads and puts down, takes their hats off because they think it's the end. Those plugs would be nice.
I think you want a drink. And then the classic. Get some tune logic
coming up. Yeah, it's like, I don't want to drink. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do.
Duck season, rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, yeah, rabbit exactly. season, duck season. You do. I don't. I do.
Like, there it is. And of course, the judge can't hold on to him because again, great acting there by Christopher Lloyd, who starts convulsing violently to give off the idea.
I love how he grabs Dolores by the cleavage on the shirt. No, he didn't grab her boobs. But.
Yeah, he grabbed her by the shirt, and we got a nice little peek of cleavage there because of it. But then, and now Eddie goes to work.
On the weasels.
Showing his fighting skills. When he showed off, he had a bit earlier. He's got some toughness to him. He's got an edge.
Yeah.
These tunes aren't going to stop Eddie Valiant.
I think he was. Yeah, he's got it in for the weasels though. After messing with him in his apartment.
Right. Exactly. So. And then also, and this is something I didn't realize until much, much later, but how the judge reacted to the dip getting near his feet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's something we obviously learned that much, much, much later on why that's important. But a little detail there, because dip shouldn't affect the person.
No.
It's just turpentine. It might mess up your shoes.
Give you a little skin rash, maybe.
Yeah, but it shouldn't. It won't kill you.
One of my favorite characters.
In the movie.
Also voiced by Charles Fleischer.
Yes, that's true. Charles Fleischer did a couple extra voices for this. And obviously, Benny doesn't sound anything like Roger, so it's fantastic.
Yes.
And we also see for the first time, the love letter mm-hmm. that Roger has. Mm-hmm. This is just a great scene altogether. Benny the Toon Car introducing more original characters and fleshing out this universe that they had created that blends Disney and Warner Brothers and original characters.
Mm-hmm.
How about those Brooklyn Dodgers? Are they bums or what? Yes, yes, they are.
And Benny, who's obviously a native New Yorker.
Oh, obviously from Brooklyn. Would you look at these two? Excuse me, ladies. Now, that's what I call a couple of road hogs.
He jives like a New Yorker, too.
Oh, yeah. No, sure. I pulled that move off plenty of times when I was back east. Oh, goodness gracious.
One of my kids' favorite pastimes is watching me get pissed off when I drive. I mean, I live in Connecticut, but I'm born and bred New Yorker, so that New York driver comes out very easily.
Yeah.
Now I see
the real police are after him. After all, I mean, Benny was a wanted. Benny was wanted. He was in the back of a squad car.
Yeah, he was going to the paddy pokey wagon.
Yeah.
Pull this lever.
Yeah.
Pull the lever. Which one? That one.
This lever is stupid. Oh, gosh. And of course, these stunt guys were earned their paycheck this day.
Yeah.
It's, whoa!
Oh, yeah, because they landed right on the ground.
Yeah, they landed on the concrete, so.
What do you call the middle of the song? Gee, a bridge. Ah!
Oh gosh, just so great, and the beautiful Hollywood Hills you just see there as they drive along on the on the road there,
and the cars and everything.
Yeah,
now that's all bad. This is probably one of those how to goofy shorts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. How to get yourself in shape or exercise, and
which are all found on Disney Plus. These are great. And I love, because I love the goofy scream.
Yeah. I mean, I love Roger's like a critic. Like, nobody takes a wallop like Goofy. Like, it's just.
Well, Goofy is the gold standard when it comes to physical comedy for tunes.
For sure.
Well, yeah. So, like we were talking about earlier, though, how cartoons were, it was like, this is how movies were. It was like, you saw a short and then you got a newsreel. This is how kind of things were done.
Because
it was like going to the movies was like a big deal back then. Because it wasn't like all the entertainment options we have today.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. I mean, of course. Yeah. And you got newsreels, especially during wartime. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of people got updates on what was going on during World War II and things like that. You know. So it was huge. And then and now of course we really get the backstory. Eddie goes into it in depth. And pulls out more alcohol.
Out of his gun holster.
Yeah.
He got away with a zillion simoleons.
Which in Toontown money, he was like, it's a buck 50. Oh, yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot.
And he's telling Roger the whole backstory on why he actually hates Toons. And you see Roger, like, just cowering,
kind of shrink away,
Yeah. Broke my arm. Teddy never made it. You just see on his face too.
The pain, yeah. I mean, this is the origin story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those burning red eyes.
That's right.
And that high, squeaky voice. disappeared into Toontown after that. No wonder you hate me. If a Toon killed my brother, I hate me too.
I don't hate you.
Yes, you do. You do hate me. Otherwise, you wouldn't have yanked my ears all those times.
I'm sorry I yanked your ears.
All the times you yanked my ears.
I guess. Well, that one time in that place. Apology accepted. Put it there, pal. Oh, boy, another cartoon.
And here's the newsreel. Here's the newsreel.
Stupid newsreel.
So, yeah. Here comes Dolores. I love her because she always dolls herself up as much as possible for Eddie, even though Eddie doesn't really deserve it.
And he said, is that line I was talking about? I had to shake the weasels.
Yeah.
And he pauses for a second, too.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, because that's it. Her bar now is done. Like, she's done. She's got nothing.
Yeah. You know, plates dip everywhere.
Yeah.
You ought to find yourself a good man.
This is the romantic scene, and then Roger ruins the moment. like the kid in the back seat of the car. Please don't mind me. Oh, goodness.
And Dolores always has a great outfit every scene she's in.
Yeah.
Got some serious hat work going, too.
Yeah, and this is where things finally start to click with the newsreel for Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Pacific Red Car and the venerated Maroon Cartoon Studios. Here, R.K. Maroon is seen clinching the deal with Cloverleaf's bankers and executives. Look at that. He just looks like a sign ball. He just looks like one.
That's the connection.
Yep, now it's all starting to make sense to Eddie. It's all starting to come together.
It's amazing the lack of security at the Maroon Cartoon Studio.
Yeah, that's not like how it is. That's not like how it is in any studios today. Let me tell you. Hey. All the parking spots are like miles away, and then you have to go in. You have like, yeah, you know how it is. But this is when things really start to get interesting, because now you don't know what's going on in this whodunit. And of course, you never separate. When you have the buddy duo, you never separate.
No, you don't. Because
then something happens.
Duke's up. Ice peel. Nobody gets a drop on Roger. Wonk. With a frying pan.
Yes. Yeah. In classic Toon fashion. Now Maroon, who...
obviously he's paranoid about something.
Yeah, with a golden pistol. Man with the golden gun over here.
Yeah, hiding in his office, no less.
Yeah, but Eddie knows the back... Of course, Eddie knows the back entrance.
You need a hot before you can have an attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the will. Yeah, see, I'll show you. I have a badge. You don't have to see it.
I mean, we'll get into it, obviously, is that technically Eddie didn't even realize... Spoiler alert. Eddie didn't even realize he actually did have the will.
The whole time.
Yeah, but we'll get into that more later. But and now you don't know who... is Jessica really a bad guy, right? Like, she's knocked out Roger. You know, she's throwing him in the trunk of a car. No, good guys don't do that.
Yeah, and Toon Physics, where you could fit a frying pan in your purse.
Yes, exactly.
I miss those things. They had those when I was a kid. Those spray
bottles. Oh, the seltzer sprayers?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was the 70s, so.
Yeah. Now Eddie's got the gun.
Yes. He wants to know the whole story here.
Yeah, he wants to know everything. He wants to have his name cleared. He wants to know why Roger's being set up. And it brings over, I love from earlier, the cartoon editing machine.
I would love to have one of those in college to learn how to edit on.
Yeah. And of course, here it is. Maroon spills the beans.
Cloverleaf is taking over.
Yeah. And Maroon, you realize Maroon really isn't that bad a guy. He just wanted to blackmail Acme.
Yeah, he wanted to sell. Yeah. He was being pressured, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably had no choice.
Yeah, and of course now Eddie sees it too late, and Acme and Maroon, I mean, takes the bullet meant for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, Acme probably knew. Maroon knew too much. So
no, exactly, he knew too much, and he had key details, knowing why about Toons being destroyed, and now Jessica's running, looking guilty as all get out.
Wrong place. Wrong
now
time.
Eddie. Now Eddie actually really. And now Eddie actually. You start to see Eddie actually does care about Roger a little bit here. Also because he knows he's figured out that he is innocent. That he isn't. He is being set up. And again, the good nature of Eddie Valiant, which what a name by the way, Eddie Valiant. You know he's not going to let this get away. And oh, look at those classic cars. Oh,
this is such eye candy. This whole movie.
Seriously.
Yeah, there's Felix the Cat on the I didn't know that before.
Yeah, a little homage to Felix there. I guess the Felix Toontown Tunnel. And now this is when Eddie starts to really like. He's got to face his fears. This will be the first time he's going back to Toontown since Teddy got killed, since his brother. He gets rid of Maroon's gun, and if you're gonna go into Toontown, you gotta have a Toon gun.
Thanks for getting me out of the Who's Cow.
Yeah,
Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, Jim Cummings did the voice of several of the animated bullets. Jim Cummings, best known also as the voice of Tigger.
Yes,
in the Pooh.
He does so many voices. Jim Cummings actually.
Oh yeah, no, he's all over the place. But he does the voice of several of the bullets here.
Ed the hyena from Lion King. Yeah, mm-hmm. Anybody who's into cartoons or voices like I kind of am, knows these names all too well. You know,
yeah.
Jim Cummings and, like I said earlier, Maurice LaMarche and Rob Paulsen.
Yeah.
Like, great cartoon voices.
Yeah, Paulsen and LaMarche have been all over the place. And now Eddie finally sobers up.
Yes.
Also, a little target practice. This was great. This was... It's not just any bullet, he's a Toon bullet.
Yeah, it's an Indian kind of different...
Yeah. Oh goodness. And now here he is. He's ready to ride back into Toontown, but also in Toontown, he's given them a huge head start by having that character moment.
Yeah.
Now it's this dark, grimy tunnel. Looks like the Lincoln Tunnel going from Jersey into the city.
And how the music starts to change.
Yeah.
You see the curtains.
Starts to get.
It's like you're literally like you're on a ride with Eddie right now.
Yes.
It's like the beginning of Looney Tunes. And just everything is alive.
Yep. Everything's alive and it's bright and shiny and everyone's singing and everything is glorious. And all of these animals and from some of them, some cameos from other cartoons and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
homage to the Silly Symphonies.
Yep.
And the early car, there's a Reluctant Dragon, the Three Little Pigs.
Yep. You had
Hi, Eddie. Bye, Eddie.
Yeah. And all the Toons probably remember him because he used to work in Toontown for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
So, as he
crashes his car.
Of course.
It's just, oh, look, there's the old lady, the old hag in Snow White. Yeah, I'm like trying to. The Seven Dwarfs are coming out of the subway.
Yeah.
Wow. Just things you look for.
Yeah.
I honestly might go back and go like frame by frame with this.
Yeah, no, especially once they get to Toontown, and then of course, this is a great scene. The old switcheroo.
Sees a silly going up, sir. Is droopy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch your step, sir.
Yeah.
mind is up, sir. Hold on, sir.
and obviously in cartoon world in Toontown. All of the physics are cartoon physics, even though Eddie's a real person.
Have a good day, sir. Yes, he sees the silhouette of, he thinks it's Jessica.
Yeah, he thinks it's Jessica.
The Man?
Yeah.
That is a goofy looking cartoon.
Yeah.
I forgot. I have to look. I'd have to look up who does this voice, because that's a very familiar cartoon voice too.
Yeah, I knew this. She is a well known actress. I just can't think of who. I can't think of her name either right now. Like, but she was well known for during the time.
Yeah,
like, for doing voices. And
I don't know if it was. Yeah, did some of the cartoons. There's Tweety Bird. Yeah. Honestly, Tweety Bird looks a little stoned right here. When he wakes up. Look, does that look like Tweety Bird's a little stone right there?
Well, she was tired. She was in her nest. She got woken up by Eddie falling on her flagpole.
Yeah. Uh-oh, when at piggies.
Yeah, you start to get all your cameos. Here's the Mickey and Bugs scene.
Which I believe, in order for them to agree to this, they had to be equal. They had to have equal screen time and everything like that.
Yes.
Because it was a Disney. Obviously, Mickey was going to be in order to get Bugs. I think that was a condition to have Bugs in this.
Yeah, is that any of the big characters? Same thing with Donald and Daffy. Like, you had to give them equal. So that's why the only times you see Donald and Daffy, they're both together. You see Bugs and Mickey, they're both together. So
spare tire.
Yeah. And everything's labeled at Acme.
Yeah. Ain't I a stinker?
Yeah. And both very true to characters.
Oh, my man.
The kiss literally knocks him down the street.
Come to Lena. I guess that's her name, Lena.
Yeah. And Eddie quickly remembers all the tune logic that he knew. Gets him every time.
Tunes. Let's
gets see. Him every time.
Yep. June Foray. Oh, my God. That's Rocket J. Squirrel.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, she did the voice of the fairy godmother. And she also did Natasha from Moose and Squirtle.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew I'd get it in Toontown.
Oh, yeah.
And there's Jessica saving Eddie's life, actually.
Yep. Don't trust anybody or anything. Same motto as Stone Cold Steve Austin. don't trust anybody. Dude. I had to get a wrestling reference in it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's like I said, Place of Nation is founded on wrestling. We always get.
Yes,
believe me, we were talking about that in Police Academy, saying, you know, when Lieutenant Callahan do her face turn?
Yeah.
So there, he fires a few more bullets, dum dums.
Yeah.
So I think we're starting to piece together that Judge Doom is behind everything.
Yes, just saw him that he run. Is. Truly the bad guy, yeah, as he obviously, it was his gun. He tried to kill Eddie. He also killed R.K. Maroon.
Caution, falling anvils.
Yeah.
My God. Oh, God. I'm like a kid in a candy store right now, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
Looking for all these different everything that's going on here. Uh-oh, it's the
here
weasels.
Here come the weasels. Gingerbread Lane's that way.
And by accident, he calls Benny the cab.
Yeah.
Hubba, hubba, hubba.
Allow me, mademoiselle.
So Jessica's known it was Doom the whole time.
Yeah. Could have said something sooner, Jessica.
Yeah. Could have saved us a lot of stuff here.
Like, it's been an hour and 20 minutes of movie that before between Acme dying and you knowing all this. Oh, God.
He makes me laugh. It's a trap!
Yep. Doom uses the dip on Benny's tires. Which I have to imagine. I mean, we prove that obviously it's not fatal, just getting a little bit of dip. Benny will come back.
Yeah. Now, there's a rumor, an urban legend, that on the Laserdisc version of this, that some cheeky animator made it that you could see Jessica Rabbit's nether region, so to speak, and if you go frame by frame on only the Laserdisc version. Now, I don't know how true that is. I think I've only known one person my entire life who owned a Laserdisc. So,
yeah, no, exactly.
Proving that theory.
Yeah. Yeah, it would take a lot to find out if that's true at this point. I'm sure Disney has found and since destroyed every laserdisc of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if that was true.
Yeah, kind of like the Little Mermaid covers.
Yeah. she got a bear trap between in her bosom. Nice booby trap, but bump. Again, didn't really think of it as anything but, oh, it's a booby trap. And then as a little kid, and then it's like, oh, it's literally a booby trap.
Yes. So we're back here at the Acme studio. We're about to get the infamous villain's monologue.
Yes. Toontown will legally be mine, lock, stock, and barrel.
Here comes Roger driving
Eddie's banked up to the left of his car.
Is that you? No, Shirley Temple. Ah! Oh! E!
Yeah.
poor Betty.
Yeah.
You got a car driving a car.
Yeah. This is always fun for a voiceover artist, too, where he's just talking to himself, basically.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of like, what's his face now? Does Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
He does, like, every voice on the damn shows.
Seth MacFarlane.
Yes, Seth MacFarlane. I probably said Seth Rogen, my mistake.
Yes. I didn't see his Sausage movie, so maybe Seth Rogen did a lot of voices there.
Oh my god, I saw that. Oof. That is something.
That's what I've heard.
Not for kids, I'll tell you.
That's what I've heard.
It was oof. Even I was kind of like, you know, and I could pretty much tolerate anything, but that it was a little too much for me.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Roger getting flushed on the toilet.
Yeah.
Judge Doom revealing he's got a dip. And now we see Jessica kind of lose her shit for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's dip.
Yeah. That's right, my dear. Enough to dip Toontown off the face of the earth. I mean, look at the monstrosity, this tank that he created.
Yes.
5,000 gallons of heated dip pumped at enormous velocity through a high-pressurized water cannon. Toontown will be erased in a matter of minutes.
Now, you would think that if the weasels are working with dip and it's, you know, fatal to them, they'd be having a little safety equipment here. You know, like some gloves.
Yeah, no, but it also just shows how crazy they are.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this is hysterical because then they're talking about the construction of the freeway, which, of course, now is the lifeblood of Los Angeles, the freeways.
Freeway.
Yeah. What the hell's a freeway? 8 lanes of shimmering cement running from here to Pasadena. Smooth, safe, fast traffic jams will be a thing of the past. And of course, the funny thing is that even in 1988, that's not true. The traffic, even back then in LA, was terrible. Goodness. And of course, now most of the highways actually out here are 12 lanes, where it's 6 on each side. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it's still not enough.
Yeah. So. I've heard or seen on TV and stuff.
Yeah. No, trust me, it's a nightmare. The 405, the 101. It's true what they say. Everything they've said is true and worse.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but I love this. I especially love this monologue now because now having lived in LA, it's so funny and poignant because it's making fun of what LA was really becoming at that time. Where it is just gas stations and automobile dealerships. I mean, there are so many car dealerships here in LA. It is ridiculous.
Or anybody go on the freeway and they could ride the red car for a nickel.
Yeah. exactly. So smart, the villainous Judge Doom. But he didn't count on one thing.
Roger.
Yeah.
He's got a gun.
Now, I also love that Maroon's gun has become his golden gun's now become a cartoon gun.
Yes.
At this point. His rage is just so palpable. I love it.
We tunes may act idiotic, but we're not stupid. like a ton of bricks. Wham, a ton of bricks falls on him.
Yes, exactly.
And the sign says, ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And he finally got the stars.
Yeah. and we get one of the weasel's names is Raul.
Actually, I think Raul was the director from the beginning.
Oh, was it? Oh, is yeah. that what he was referencing? Oh, maybe you're right. Yeah,
that was a callback.
I gotcha. Oh, gosh. They do have names, though. I'm pretty positive of that. I just don't know what they are.
I'm sure it's somewhere on Wikipedia or the Google or something.
Yeah. Because you can't just name them Weasel 1, 2, 3. Like, they all, like you said earlier, they all have their own pretty distinct personalities. Yeah,
there's Black and White Smoking Weasel. There's, Straight Jacket Weasel. There's
right.
Baseball there's the Hat.
There's the dummy, yeah, the dummy with the beanie and the baseball bat, like the overgrown kid one, like
yeah, the green yeah. suit one, the white suit one.
Yeah, you know the sergeant, which is the pink one's the leader, the one in and then the one in the green is kind of more suave, yeah. yeah. It's, but yeah, no, obviously now this is when Eddie starts to come up with an idea. Yeah,
not so fast. Again.
If yourselves to death.
Again, you're giving another warning. Eddie, I should repose at him now, boss.
Yeah, always says the wrong word.
And Eddie kind of
let him watch his student friends get dipped, then shoot him.
You kind of see Eddie's face kind of gets a little light bulb goes above his head.
Yeah. As Doom goes to put back his, basically put his eye back in. didn't know what he was doing before, but now he.
So Eddie breaks into a merry-go-round song here.
Yep, the merry-go-round broke down from earlier in the bar that Roger was singing along to.
I never noticed that same song. And starts yep. going into pratfalls and physical comedy to get a laugh yep. here. Basically smacking himself in the head and landing on his keister.
Yep.
And Roger knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Singing ain't my line. It's tough to make a rhyme. If I get stuck, I'm out of luck. And
yeah.
I'm running out of time.
Starts juggling and lets it all hit on his head.
Slips on a banana peel. That's never not funny.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And a pogo stick.
Yeah, the pogo stick. I mean, he literally pulls out every gag that Acme has in his warehouse yeah. here. And, and oh. here it is. And then up. Oh, look at what he's did. Oh, he laughed himself to death.
And the one was like, and, no, I don't want to go. And the spirit.
You're literally, you're killing him. You're slaying him. You're knocking him dead. Literally in Toontown, you can knock him dead with comedy. Of course, though, things quickly go awry.
Kick him in the nose. Doesn't rhyme with walls.
That don't rhyme with walls.
This does.
No, but this does. Hey!
And he ends up in the dip.
In the dip, yep.
And another weasel kicks it and leaves nope, the...
That's it. He takes his foot off the brake, however, yeah. and now suddenly the dip tank is moving, and the asylum weasel, of course, is now he's got hold of the gun, or he will anyway. He's gonna be like, and then he's like, bye bye.
Yeah. And make sure he points in the right direction.
Yeah, he taps it back the other way as he hugs his harp. Oh gosh, this is just it's I'm not gonna lie, it's hard to keep commenting because it's just so wonderful to watch.
Yes,
this whole sequence. And now Judge Doom, who has come back from putting his face back together, is now riding one of the conveyor belts to come back after Eddie, because he realizes as things have gone haywire here on a zip line, Batman drop kicks him off the tank. And now has a cane sword, which is one of the coolest weapons always.
Yes. Singing sword.
And Frank Sinatra. This is actually Frank. This is actually yeah. They actually got Sinatra for this. Oh gosh!
Such a good caricature of Sinatra too.
Yes.
cartoon magnets always.
Yes. Always just the the way it's animated and everything with the hands. It's just
Starts pulling Doom forward.
Yeah. And then the glare off the glasses is so haunting almost with that scene where he's looking through and you can't see his eyes and it's just that reflection. Just so brilliantly shot, the whole thing. Just so well done. I mean, in this scene, this culmination is so... It's so long, too, right? This climax, this final battle, like, so much happens in this. It's almost like a video game boss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and even then, and, you know, again, we'll spoil things real quickly. Judge Doom even has two forms, like a Japanese RPG boss or something. Like, it's just, it's phenomenal. And here, and Eddie at the last second escapes.
Who has a steamroller in their factory?
Well, it's Toontown, right? Yeah. It's Acme, you know, so, I mean, he needs it, I'm sure, for a variety of different reasons.
And there's Mrs. Jumbo in the neck back there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of glue.
Yeah. I'm sure Wile E. Coyote needs it for something or other.
Yeah, probably.
One of Marvin Acme's best customers. And then now this is when things... Again, this is when things started to get a little traumatic for me as well because, you know... This appears. This isn't like the Wicked Witch of the West getting crushed by her house, which you don't actually see. Mm-hmm. Doom is literally about to be steamrolled.
Yes.
And you're going to see all of it, but it's a little okay because it's you'll see. Like in this moment, I'm like, whoa, like that's like this. Yes. This is a lifetime of fear in this moment.
And therapy.
Whenever I see a steamroller, has been. instituted in me from a young age, like
there was something in production or pre-production, some Wile E. Coyote thing where it was supposed to be him and he's suing the Acme Corporation or something. It was like a courtroom drama or something like that with cartoons
or something. That's funny.
I know for Ryan, it was like something that's Ryan Rose. He's a toon.
Is the great reveal. Brain freeway idea can only be cooked up by a tune, but not, and then the great reveal, not just any tune, as he goes over to the healing, to the air tank, to put himself back into form.
Yeah.
And the eyes and his fake eyeballs that he had to put back in before.
Remember me, Eddie?
When I killed your brother, I talked just like this!
Daggers. The eyes,
literally staring daggers at him.
He's got springs in his feet.
Yeah.
So now we know why Doom was actually afraid of the dip as well.
Exactly.
Why it's okay, he got steamrolled.
Right, yeah.
Kids, it's okay. He was a cartoon all the whole time.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he's not just like any cartoon. He's like Clayface. Like, I mean, he's pulling out like...
Yeah.
Springs from his shoes. He's got an anvil for a hand. Now he's got a buzzsaw for a hand.
Yeah, he's like a Green Lantern even, too. He can, like, form anything.
Yes, exactly. Like, and, like it's just – and the buzzsaw gets bigger and bigger as he stretches it. And, like, showing how effective it is as he cuts through chains. Yes. like truly taunting him in true villainous fashion as he goes in for the kill.
Any good villain needs to show how you know, destructive their weapons are before they actually use them.
Yes.
Look, and this the effect of like, you know, the air blowing up from the buzzsaw.
Yeah. And again, earlier from the mallet, the boxing glove mallet from the original crime scene.
And there goes Doom with the gets and covered in dip.
He gets the dip. Mm-hmm. And it all falls out of the tank, just saving Jessica and Roger
and
by the slimmest of margins. And of course, yeah, now as the whole warehouse is filled with the 5,000 gallons of steaming hot dip.
A very drawn out death scene. I'm yes, melting. And, I'm melting. And this is
here's your Wicked Witch moment. Yes. What a world! What a world!
We never actually see his true form.
No, you don't. You always have to assume that he's still hiding and that skin is still really a
costume.
It's something he's hiding in, but that's crazy. Just such a scene, and then of course Eddie just saves it through and they end up destroying the barrier to Acme's warehouse in Toontown anyway. Mm-hmm. As in fitting fashion, the tank will shortly be demolished. Wait for it. There it is. There's the train. Just conveniently passing by and then back the other way on the cart. Yeah. And then it's just
the fire hydrant. You know, he's got to get safe for the tunes now.
Yep. That's a lot of fire hydrants in a warehouse.
Well,
I'm guessing
Marvin Acme was kind of a jokester.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a few fires around the warehouse over the years.
And also, you know, they used different chemicals back then, so probably a lot more flammable.
That's true. That's true.
Acme eyeballs, banana skins. I'm like just reading all the crates in the background.
Yeah.
My hero. Roger's getting all the accolades.
And Eddie's like, figures. Just, and now here come, and Benny, still with his, well, his fat tires aren't as bad, but,
Sister Mary, Mary
Francis.
I use that sometimes. Now comes Peter from Peter and the Wolf. I love that story when I was a little kid. Oh, what was that, rubber mask?
Yep.
Santino.
Find your lab, boys. We'll find that's a perfect match. Judge Doom killed Marvin Acme. And R.K. Maroon. And my brother.
Yeah. Glad they really solved that cold case. Now here comes all the other characters. Yeah. Some we haven't seen before yet. You know, we saw Dopey like on a sign. But I'm trying to see who's in there. Yeah. There's Wile E. Coyote. Jose Caraca, Sylvester Lambert, the Cowardly Lion.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many you could pick out there.
Mm-hmm.
That Goof Acme squirted it with a knife, and it's now disappearing, reappearing ink.
Applesauce. There's the big, the Wicked Wolf. There's Woody Woodpecker.
There's
another studio, actually.
Yeah.
The Walter Lantz studio.
Yeah.
I always love to quote the Woody Woodpecker cartoon. If Woody had gone straight to the police, this would never have happened.
Yeah.
and the reading of the will.
The big reveal that the will wasn't written in the disappearing, reappearing ink. Because actually, to the genius of Acme, he knew somebody was out to get him. So it was a perfect way to hide the will in plain sight. And Eddie still doesn't get his kiss. And Dolores is really starting to have it with this rabbit.
She's like, it's like, are we going to have to go to Catalina with these people?
Oh, gosh. And everybody thinks that Eddie's furious.
I'll tell you, you lost your sense of humor already. Does that answer your question? Yeah, another kiss for Roger.
Yeah. And everybody cheers. Huzzah.
Let's go home. How big a carrot cake?
Ooh.
I don't think that's a euphemism. She's literally going to bake him a carrot cake.
Yes. No, yes, exactly. And yeah, there's the remains of Judge Doom just still sitting there and everybody singing their happy song. As they all walk off happily into the sunset one last time.
Mm-hmm. God, This, just looking at these cartoon characters, with the old timey, you know, animated police here, and of course you have to give Porky the last line of the movie.
Yeah, the final word.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, like, as if this is where this is where he came up with it.
Yes, and Tinkerbell. Oh, fun movie.
Yeah, so good.
And they've made some Roger shorts since then. It's been a long time.
Yes, I did. They did make some shorts with Roger.
I did. I do have it. I think my one of the few VHSs I still have is Roller Coaster Rabbit, which is one of them.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, well, I don't know if I might have one working VCR in this house. Yeah, based on the book Who Censored Roger Rabbit.
Yep.
Produced by Gary Spielberg and Kathleen Kennedy.
Yes, very. I didn't realize Kathleen Kennedy helped with this.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure.
She did a better job with this than Star Wars.
Everything goes back to Star Wars with you guys.
Yeah, it all gets back there at some point.
And Charles Fleischer.
Charles Fleischer, yeah, mm-hmm. The voice of Roger.
Stubby K,
that's who played Acme. And, of course, Joanna Cassidy as Dolores.
Alan Silvestri. Another.
Oh, his music, his score was amazing throughout this. You know, we didn't get the chance to – watching this with some of us, we didn't get the chance to hear it. But if you can, folks, it is – when you do listen to this, it is so – perfect, mm-hmm. where it balances that line between cartoony zaniness, yet that old school jazz too. That kind of would be fitting for the noir era mm-hmm. of everything. And then we get the full cast here of everybody from. There it is. Charles Fleischer also as Benny the Cab. Joel Silver as Raul. You're right, the director. My apologies. Okay. There.
Yeah. Maybe there are people that are make far many more mistakes than some of these shows, so trust me.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah, it's a lot of information and going on in your head. So Greasy.
There's Greasy, Psycho, Smartass, Stupid, and Wheezy are the names of the the weasels. Mm-hmm. And a couple of those were done by Fleischer as well. Of course, most of them were just laughs, but so good. Yeah. So good. I knew they had names.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very much, right. Redemption.
Very much like the Seven Dwarves, the weasels. Wise Ass. That's a good name for a weasel.
the anti-dwarves, I guess you want to say. So much fun. Yeah, if you like music scores of movies, we have a show. It's kind of comes when it feels like coming, the Glenn Butler podcast, Hour Spectacular. Glenn and his brother Scott often do scores. They actually just did one on Star Wars. They did a whole bunch of series leading into the release of the last Skywalker, or the Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, John Williams absolutely iconic,
mm-hmm.
you know. So... Yeah, I mean, it just, I mean, John Williams is just, he's done so much.
Yeah, so much. And we can't recommend this movie more. I mean, hopefully everybody's watched along with us. Look at Scorey says Joe Ranft. You know, I'm seeing names pop out. Joe Ranft was one of the founding fathers of the Brain Trust of Pixar. Unfortunately, passed away in an accident on the Pacific Coast Highway. But he was the one, he did the voice of Heimlich. In Bug's Life, and he did Wheezy in Toy Story. I think I feel a song coming on. That guy. So very fun, yeah. So you never know what you could see when you actually watch the credits.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing, too. Like, a lot of these guys in I mean, animation is their lifers, right? Mm-hmm. They've come up through the ranks. Like, I mean, one of my favorite stories is... this is Warner Brothers, so it kind of works for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Mm-hmm. But Bruce Timm, who of course it was the one of the masterminds behind Batman animated series, and then really dominated Warner Brothers animation for 15 to 20 years with a lot of continuing series and built that animated universe. But he got his start as a storyboarder on G.I. Joe.
Wow.
On the G.I. Joe cartoon. So that's where he, at least that might not have been his start, but that was definitely his big project. Before he went to Warner Brothers and did Batman animated series. Hey,
we see some ILM credits. That's probably why Kathleen Kennedy was involved. Because ILM probably did a lot of some of the effects in this movie.
Yeah, that's true. This was, and for them, they were that was still in their infancy, because they really had got their biggest project at that point. Obviously, was Return of the Jedi, and then this was really something that really kind of opened up a lot of people's eyes to what they could do, because again, this was so special effects heavy in terms of, again, the animation and the animatronics and what they did to make this. To make this work.
Yeah, because the only things we saw up to this point was like Pete's Dragon, so dear to my heart, that the movie with the mouse and who was it, Gene Kelly dancing. I mean, we didn't see a lot of this kind of stuff.
Not to this effect. Yeah. I mean, even Mary Poppins, right? You had Mary Poppins and, you know, Dick Van Dyke and Julie Andrews in the cartoon world, where they're riding the horses for a while. And you mentioned also at the very beginning, the penguins, of course, who were the waiters at the Ink Club. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, like you said, they're never for a whole movie.
Yeah. This was very ambitious. Very, very ambitious.
So, and probably it's part of the reason why we have movies like Space Jam and things like that came afterwards, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, paved the way.
Yeah. But this is something special. This was one of a kind. Again, won three Academy Awards, including a fourth for a special achievement award that they gave it. That was just and then you see here also the extra credits for everybody that was used outside of Warner Brothers and Disney and everybody there. And so, so good, so good.
Great movie. So, Ray, where can everybody find you on the internet? What's coming up? What to look out for on the Geeks Like Sports? And you have a whole social media presence also, right?
Yeah, so you can find me personally. Just look Ray Carcillo. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Twitch. Also on Twitch, twitch.tv/RayCarcillo. I'm playing a lot of MLB The Show right now. But of course, yes, Geeks Who Like Sports. You can find us wherever podcasts are heard. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud. You know, the list goes on. If we're not on something, message us. I promise you we'll get there sooner rather than later, because every time we find something new, we get on it. But Geeks Who Like Sports, we are a weekly podcast. We're trying to do some more stuff second time a week. We're trying to do some more interviews and trying to get more content out there. But we have a fun Facebook group that Andy's a part of, and we appreciate it. And we're always asking everybody, you know, fun questions and having some good debates. And I think that, if you are a geek, and you don't have to be a geek who likes sports or whatever. You can just be a geek, or you can just be a sports guy. I promise you, you'll also find you'll find something there for you as well. But if you like both, I think you're going to really find a home with us. So I think that's about it. Geeks Who Like Sports. And I'm Ray Carcillo, and just trust me, everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, it's a fun community over on the Facebook group. I share from my other podcast pages there to kind of just spark some conversations, especially now, because people kind of need it to take their minds off things, maybe engage a little bit. You know, we had a fun one. You know, I combed the internet, and my daughter helps me out actually find these, like, you know, what would you choose kind of things, or just how many can you spot in this picture? Because, you know what, it takes your mind off things for a little while. I'm not saying that, like, you know, there's a zombie outbreak, but we're kind of in an unusual situation right now with the whole corona virus isolation, whatever you want to call it, quarantine. So let's all stick together and laugh and just have fun with each other. And Geeks Who Like Sports is a great way to do it, because it is a fun little community, and there's a lot of people post a lot of fun, great stuff in there, a lot of fun topics that, you know, people are great, and everybody's friendly, which is rare sometimes that you see on these things. You know, there's nobody's out there trying to be the smartest guy in the room, which is really what's one of the things I really love about that group. But as for me, you can check out all my shows here on the PlayStation Nation Pop feed. I have a doing special episodes. We call them Laugh in Isolation Theater. Usually they're group watches. The last one was just myself and Mr. Sean Kidd. We watched Police Academy, so that should be coming up very soon. The next Laugh in Isolation Theater, which I guarantee will have a group watch, we're doing the Ryan Reynolds, Amy Smart comedy, Just Friends. So it's just a good time. Everybody just goofs off, and hopefully everybody gets infectious. Coming up on the next episode of Laughing Theater, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato is returning, and we're going to watch Animal House. That's right. That's going to be a quote-a-thon on that one, as well as check me out my next episode of Plop Goes the Classics, which I host with Miranda Berthold and Chad Campbell. We're talking about 1940s Fantasia. That should be coming up by the time you hear this, as well as maybe a new episode of Great Debate. I just had one that came up last week with your partner, Lee, along with Scott and Sean. We talked a lot of fun stuff, a lot of Spider-Man, actually, on that episode. And nice. Don't forget, and check me out over on the wrestling feed. I have new episodes of the Great Debate wrestling version coming probably beginning of May. And then shortly after that, I have the Evolution of, and it's somebody, I'm trying to think if I should reveal or not who it is. So we're actually, you know what, I'm going to spill the beans here. So the first episode was with Mr. Scott Criscolo, and we went over the career of Paul Levesque, a.k.a. Triple H. Well, the next episode, I have his PIC, Mr. JT Rosero, and we're going to go look at the career of the one, the only, Macho Man, Randy Savage. That's right. So,
ooh, yeah!
Snap into it! So, Justin is a huge Savage fan. He's a super fan. And I couldn't think of anybody better to come and talk about the Macho Man. So check those out over on the wrestling feed, as well as new episodes of Body Pressure Luck, which I am a part of. That is our wrestling trivia game show that comes monthly, hosted by Justin and Mr. Jordan Duncan. Don't forget to check out of all of our placebnation.com, all of our Facebook pages, Great Debate, Laughing Theater has Facebook pages. And coming soon, the new tournament is going to be started. That is the Greatest Junk Food Tournament. So, you know, Doritos, Oreos, Slim Jims, or, you know, who knows, Drake's Cakes, Yodels, any of those could win. So keep an eye on that. That's going to be a fun little tournament. And then our big summer music tournament. We haven't revealed what the theme is yet, but that's going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for all that. But for now, I want to say thank you to Mr. Ray Carcillo for joining me for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And
thank you for having me, Andy.
It was my pleasure, right? Seriously was. All right, so, but for now, the theater is closed. We'll see you on the next showing. Take care, everybody.
It's okay. Fucking okay.
Oh, God.